Magic matters. I was having a conversation today, and I realized that some of the most impactful things that I do with my team have nothing to do with coaching Agile. It's not teaching them Scrum techniques, which they could easily learn on their own. Of course, this is an important part of what I do, but none of this stuff builds better teams at all. When you're trying to motivate people to perform, you're basically asking them to do something for you. And when you're asking people to do things for you, logic doesn't matter, reason doesn't matter, but trust matters. What's one of the secrets you won't read about in any Agile book about getting people to trust you? That's this week on the Badass Agile Podcast. Greetings, team. Welcome to the Badass Agile Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Williams. Greetings, guys. Thanks for joining. What's one of the voodoo secrets to getting people to work together, to row in the same direction, and to become a high-performing team? First, let's remember why we're here. To create an elite tribe of leaders who use agile principles to improve their leadership game, which they can then bring back to their clients, teams, and projects. There are so many resources about what you need to do to become agile, but we're focused on who you need to become in order to lead teams. Become an agile person, become a badass, and your leadership skills will improve. And guys, if this helps you, don't forget to tell your friends about this podcast. You know, as much as I'd like to be able to sell books or sell you a process or a framework to help you get this stuff, there are certain parts of my job as a coach that come down to pure voodoo. Things that appear in exactly zero Agile or Scrum texts, and they're barely in the leadership canon either, so don't look for it in the Harvard Business Review or in the business self-help section. Because the truth is, as people, we hate this stuff. We hate the stuff that we can't quantify. It scares us to talk about these things. We like things that are testable, things that are provable, especially when it comes to business. But there are certain things about being a leader that you can't quantify and you can't codify. And this is troublesome because the well-groomed leader would have you believe that a deep knowledge of the art and science of business plus some secret natural breeding is what makes for a great leader. So people who have it or think they have it want to keep it and want to keep it elite. Other people are more comfortable thinking that great leadership can be learned. And there's a little bit of truth to both, actually. A lot of this stuff is highly teachable and highly learnable, and sometimes it seems like the best leadership practices truly belong to the selected few. I actually think that it's all teachable, but the reality is, so often, we focus on learning and teaching the wrong stuff. Now, after doing this job for quite a few years now, the one thing that I've noticed that really grabs people, that really makes them suck their breath in, that really makes them stop and look, the one thing that I do that makes people ask questions, how did you do that? Or I want to learn more about that. The one thing that I do that makes other people want to become coaches and do what I do is my ability to read people, the ability to lock down their core essence and sometimes even predict their next move, sometimes after only one meeting. Now, you may not believe me at first, but honestly, the best way to prove it is for you to see a coach who doesn't have that skill trying to work a room. I've had guitar students in the past who technically understand what needs to be done, who do all the right things in the right sequence, but for whatever reason, can't string them together in a way that's convincing. There's no soul. They don't play from the heart. And that's really hard to teach, and if it's gone, you miss it. If you think about it, the ability to read people is a badass trait. The badass just seems to have your number. He calls you out on your bullshit. He might be inarticulate, but he still has you dead to rights. It's almost like he has a street wisdom that no amount of education or social grace could substitute for. And that's kind of true. As a matter of fact, think about it. Our animal heritage actually gives us all the equipment we need to read people without words. We're the only species that communicates with words. But we still have in our heritage what our lesser counterparts, like dogs and lizards, all know how to do, which is to assess threat with the senses that we have based on the signs that another individual is putting out for us. So being able to observe, distinguish patterns, and then observe variations from those patterns, and being able to assemble a complete and cohesive picture from a person's words, yes, but more importantly, from the parts of them that can't lie, which are their body movements, postures, and the micro expressions that they give off. This is how we detect the true nature of a person, whether they're a threat, whether they're being truthful. Now, can you learn this? Sure. First, though, you have to learn how to observe people, which means taking the focus off yourself for a while and putting it on the other person. There's a saying in our culture that there's a reason why you have two ears and only one mouth, because we should be listening far more than we speak. If you want to be able to connect with people, you have to be listening, observing, and empathizing with them. And that means shut up, watch, and listen. So if you want to learn this skill, remember that. You're going to have to sit still, get out of your own head, stop thinking about what clever thing you're going to say next, and start watching. Watch all of them and listen to everything they say. Now, that's a pretty simple concept. The difficult part is knowing exactly where to look and listen and what to look and listen for. This is where it gets a little bit complex. Now, I believe when you're trying to learn a skill, the best thing you can do is learn it from the people who are the absolute best at it. So people who understand their craft almost intuitively, they can do it more accurately and faster than anyone else, and they can do that because they've practiced it way more than you. Not only have they put in more hours, but this is their passion. This is the core of what they do. This is an essential life skill for them. So in this area, truly, law enforcement agents and interviewers, and also customs agents, are the best at this stuff. So go to your favorite bookseller or look for it online, or you can even read articles online that are about reading body language and reading people, written by law enforcement agents, customs officials, people who interview other people and need to know whether they're being truthful or not. I've read a bunch of those books and they're fascinating. And the one thing they all say that's totally in common is, as I mentioned before, you can't hide the signals that your body puts out when you're interacting with another person, because those signs and cues are your body's way of handling uncertainty and fear, fear of harm, fear of death, fear of exposure, fear of loss, fear of embarrassment. We react to those things at an unconscious level. And so the signs that we put out are completely beyond our control. Having that knowledge alone, guys, does two important things for you. Number one, if you're just willing to do a little bit of looking and observing and paying attention, you can learn an awful lot about what other people are afraid of versus what they're very comfortable with. So that'll tell you what things they're experienced in versus not experienced in. That will tell you whether they have a high degree of adversity to risk or whether they're very comfortable with risk. But the second thing that it will do for you is that if you can learn to bring those under conscious control, then you can give the impression that you're more comfortable than you actually are in any given situation. And that often gives you just enough fuel to get through uncomfortable situations that you're not at ease with. Like, for example, giving a presentation, sitting in front of somebody who can give or take away your job, sitting in front of a high-powered executive or a person that you deem important. So I believe that learning this skill, however voodoo it might sound, is extremely important. No matter which book you read, they'll all give you some version of the following. There's give or take four different areas that you should be paying attention to. The first one is another person's posture. Is their posture generally open or closed? So open means they sit upright, they're expansive, which means shoulders back, head tilted up or even slightly back, legs apart, arms at their sides or arms in front of them. In general, not adopting any posture that's protecting the vital organs. So the reason why people slouch, the reason why people cover their neck, the reason why people cross their arms or cross their legs goes way, way, way back to our monkey brain. The monkey brain believes that if another person is a threat, they are likely to go for the arteries in the neck, the arteries in the upper thigh, or the vital organs, lungs, heart, liver, kidney, and so on. So when you see someone crossing their arms, what they're literally doing is reacting to a subconscious signal that this person is a threat, and therefore you need to make sure that your lungs and heart are safe, so let's get those arms crossed in front of our chest. The opposite to this, someone who shows confidence and ease in any social situation, is a person who is relaxed. They're not trying to protect their neck, so their chin is tilted up ever so slightly. Their shoulders are back. Their arms are in front of them on the table, at the sides in the armrest, but never crossed in front of them or sitting in their lap. The second area you should be looking at is eye contact. Can they make and hold eye contact with you, or the minute they realize you're looking at them, if they drop their gaze, that's important. There are certain times in which a person will break eye contact, usually when someone is thinking, contemplating, or remembering, but a person who can't hold eye contact for a reasonable period of time usually feels somewhat inferior or somewhat frightened. Number three, look for fidgeting and movement. Fidgeting and movement means that the body is anxious and they need somewhere to put that anxiety. So they start drumming the table, or they might be picking up a pencil and doodling with it. You may notice their legs or their feet bouncing, especially if they sit cross-legged. You might see them bouncing their foot rhythmically on the ball of the foot if they're sitting flat-footed on the floor. You may notice subtle rocking back and forth, or a person may be inclined to get up and walk around. Number four, there's the automatic responses, the things that you can't control very easily at all, like a dry mouth, dilated pupils, sweating, and things like over-explaining or repeating themselves because it's clear they're not using their cognitive function to its full capacity. So dry mouth is really noticeable if a person's talking. Sometimes you'll see a film build up in the corner of the mouth, or you'll actually hear their mouth clicking. Dilated pupils is a sign that a person believes there is imminent danger, so their eyes are widening to make sure that they take everything in. You have to get comfortable enough to be an observer where you can just sit back, get out of your own head, stop thinking, and just watch. And if you watch, you'll notice these behaviors in people as you're talking to them. But the truth is 90% of people don't really bother to observe consciously at all. However, here's what's neat. Whether you know it or not, every person reacts subconsciously to these cues, and that's why it's so important for a badass to practice the right ones. So even a person who's not a keen social observer, a person who's not trying to improve their voodoo game so that they can be more effective with people and teams, still knows that something's wrong when somebody's fidgeting or sweating or can't look them directly in the eye. A few notes that are important. People react differently if they're one-on-one versus in groups. They will react differently if they're just observers of a situation, a meeting, or a presentation, versus if they are the presenter or the person doing the talking. So what's truly illustrative is not just the behavior itself, but what is their baseline behavior? In order to get a good picture of someone, it's usually helpful to watch them over time. Over a number of interactions, notice, do they always fidget, even if they're sitting watching a slideshow and in a one-on-one conversation with you? If they are, they may just be an anxious person, or they may not be good in groups. What you're interested in is the moments in which it changes. So a person who never fidgets but starts fidgeting like crazy the minute they have to run a demo is a person who's really not comfortable when they're in front of other people and they feel like something's on the line. Also, note that this can be different across cultures. So what is absolutely true and what's fear-inducing in North America may be slightly different in other countries. So as you're doing your research and reading, try to get some sensitivity for the fact that different groups of people will have different customs and norms. One very important trick. Watch for this really closely in leaders or people that you're trying to negotiate or bargain with, because it can give you, obviously, tremendous competitive advantage if you know how to use this information correctly. Now let's dive in on that. How do you use all of this information to build trust? Because knowing that a person is very nervous or very uncomfortable or very confident in certain situations is useful, but not really effective on its own. If you want to build trust with people, do the following two things. Number one, mirror their expressions, and number two, echo their words. A big part of building trust and being able to influence others is likability. And likability is predicated on perceived sameness. So the more I think you are like me, the more I tend to like and trust you. One of the easiest ways to build likability and to do it without the other person knowing that you're doing it consciously is to mirror them. So if you're sitting in a one-on-one situation, and that could be you sitting across the table from me, but it could also be I'm doing a presentation and you stand up to ask a question. And as you ask a question, I simply observe. I notice that your arms are folded in front of you. Or if you're sitting at a table, I may notice that you're leaning in or you're leaning back. I may notice your hands folded in front of you. I might notice that your legs are crossed. Whatever the case may be, mirror, do the same thing that they're doing as much as is practical. So if they're leaning in, you lean in. If their arms are folded, you fold your arms. If their head is tilted slightly, you do the same. Now, don't mirror eye contact, don't mirror fidgeting, obviously, and don't try to mirror, because you can't, if somebody's sweating or has dry mouth, but mirror posture. Now, the other kind of mirroring that you can do is the second one, is echoing, which means repeating back to a person something that they've just said. This does two powerful things. Number one, it lets them know that you're listening in the first place. So repeating back, not whole sentences, but just a couple of words that indicate you have the essence of what they're telling you, lets them know that you're listening. Number two, it lets them know that you care. It lets them know that you sympathize. It lets them know that you're trying to get into their shoes, get into their heads. So here's how you do it. Let's say you're working with someone in management who just does not get agile. They're the resistance. You're trying to work with them, and you're trying genuinely to build consensus. They say to you, you know, I get all this agile stuff, Steve, but at the end of the day, I'm really all about the bottom line. That's what I'm concerned about, is the bottom line. So they're sitting back in their chair. They're waving their arms around. You mirror by sitting back in your chair. Don't wave your arms, but simply say, I get it. You're concerned about the bottom line, while you're nodding your head. Believe me or don't believe me, but try it. It works. Now this person thinks that you are not necessarily in agreement, but that you have heard them and that you understand. And when you're trying to build trust, that's the most important thing. These are the tricks that you won't find in any Scrum guide. These are the tricks that you won't find in any leadership book. But they work. Caring about people, paying attention to what they're saying, observing where they're comfortable and where they're uncomfortable, noticing whether they're a threat, are all a huge part of building an incredible team dynamic. And if you want to take these tips to the next level, share it with your teams. People love this stuff. People will see you as someone who wants to share the tools and techniques that can help them in their careers, that can help them in their personal lives. Sharing this stuff just seems to bring a certain cool factor to your persona as a coach and leader. But remember, guys, it has to come from a sincere place. You can't fake this stuff, and you can't use it for evil. Note that this is a continuing practice. You won't get great at this overnight, but if you're willing to make the investment, I guarantee it'll be worth it. And let me know how this works for you guys. Folks, thanks for listening. You can reach out at badassagile.com or find me on Twitter @badass_agile, and I'll see you next time.